I read that cereal originated with just some experiments that you did in your basement. And I'm wondering what the recipe is for a good experiment.
What is the recipe for a good experiment? I mean, cereal started, it wasn't like we were noodling around in the basement and we were like, aha, I think, you know, it's more that cereal itself as a project was an experiment. That cereal was the experiment, you know, at that time when we were making it, just because we didn't know, no one had really done something like that where it's a, you know, an investigation into a story in a chapter by chapter way where they're all gonna, I mean, it's serial, like a serialized documentary. Like that just hadn't been done as a podcast before that I know of. So in that sense, it was an experiment. We just didn't know if people would like it, you know, or would stay with it after the first 10 minutes of listening. You know, you don't know. But I don't know. Like, what are the ingredients of an experiment? I mean, you have to, I guess, kind of built into the idea of an experiment, right, is risk. That you have to be prepared for it not to work and be okay with that. And we were okay with that. I mean, it would have been really disappointing, obviously, and expensive, but we were in this incredibly lucky, luxurious position where that was going to be okay. That even if it didn't make any, you know, if it lost money or if we broke even or whatever, that was fine. Like no one was going to lose their job. No one was going to lose their house. Like we were going to be fine. Mm. So in some sense, the risk, you could say like the stakes were kind of low because like no one was going to be facing the abyss if it didn't work. But yeah, in your head, you're kind of like, I don't know if this is going to fly. But like, let's give it a go. And so in that sense, you're taking a risk. You don't know ahead of time how it's going to lay out. And so you're taking a risk sort of just like in a business way, but also creatively and journalistically. You're doing things that you're just like, we're just going to try it. We're going to try it. It seems sound to us, but we don't know. And we're just going to, we feel free enough to try it. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I guess sort of like freedom and the knowledge that something might fail would be key ingredients.
Yeah, and being okay with that, I guess. When you won the Peabody Award for Serial in 2014, you said that you were happy that there was an audience for journalism that takes its time.
Mm-hmm.
This is different, of course, than what you get in a typical news cycle.
Sure.
And I mean, that's why I got completely sucked in was just how you could be immersed in. You know, with the first season, you were immersed in the culture of these teenagers examining issues around race, learning things about how our legal system works. And then with the second season, it was about, oh gosh, U.S. foreign policy and the Taliban and mm-hmm. Afghanistan and how the military is structured. And then S-Town, you know, you go into a whole other world.
Mm-hmm.
And so these shows allow us to take the time to go down rabbit holes and really get the whole story. And I'm wondering, as a journalist who used to report for, you know, the New York Times and ABC and other more mainstream outlets, I'm wondering what you think of mainstream media and how it tells the story compared to journalism that takes its time. And do you think there's a problem there?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I think there is absolutely a really important, hugely important role for daily journalism. You know, I think it's like sort of what our democracy depends on, frankly. But there's a good version and a crummy version of anything, right? So there's really wonderful daily journalism happening, or, you know, the kind of 24-hour news cycle journalism happening all the time. And then there's really horrible, sort of cynical, lazy, self-serving journalism happening all the time. You know, I mean, I don't paint it all with one brush. I mean, I think the thing that I sometimes find disappointing is, and then sometimes this is built into the journalism, but it's more the reaction to the news, where it does feel like more and more as I've gotten older, maybe it's just something I've noticed more and more as I've gotten older, is just like we feel this need as citizens somehow to take a side over everything. Like, you can't just be like, huh, that seems like a problem. We should sort of work together to solve. You know, it has to be like thumbs up, thumbs down all the time. And I feel like the urgency and the quickness of the internet encourages that, where it sort of makes you possibly feel powerful, but also seem and look powerful if you have a very, very strong opinion one way or the other. And it's fine to have a strong opinion, but you'd really, really, I feel like you need to know what you're talking about. And that's the part that I struggle with, where I just feel like everybody's kind of pontificating about stuff they don't fully understand. And that's where I hope we can somehow come in, is just be like, everybody, take a breath, just slow down. Just open your mind to the possibility that there are things about this story you don't fully understand, and maybe a little more perspective might like sort of settle the dust a little and have everybody behave a little more kindly to one another with a little more empathy, a little more understanding. And like, I just think better decisions come from that place. Mm. So, you know, it's not that I think like, it's all broken, you know. I just am like, I just wish we could acknowledge as like Americans, as citizens, as like all the stuff that I'm pretending I understand fully, I don't understand it fully. And to understand it fully, I'm going to have to slow it down.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And with Serial, it seems like, I mean, you're sort of the main character in these stories to me, and you're taking us along, and we're seeing everything from your point of view. And I personally came to trust your judgment because you worked really hard to uncover everything and from every angle and come at it from an unbiased approach. And then if you did feel like there was bias, you would admit it. But you must have received a lot of feedback from people who were like, you should have taken this side or that side. Yeah, taken more of a strong.
Yeah, I mean, there's always plenty of people who disagree with anybody who's putting themselves like forward and presenting information, right? Like that will
right.
happen with any news story. I mean, just go on the comments page, right, to any news story, and you'll see like, whoa, people really feel strongly about this. And so, of course, like we received lots and lots of, you know, feedback. Some of it constructive, some of it not, you know, And yeah, I mean, I think, yes, because I was so front and center, particularly in season one, not so much in season two, but particularly in season one, where I was, you're right, like admitting when I was confused, admitting when I was conflicted, you know, just admitting when I was like a little lost or. And yeah, that makes you vulnerable. Absolutely. It makes you vulnerable. But I guess this is sort of goes back to the thing I was just saying, is like, I think it's okay to admit that. Like, I'm not, if I felt all those things but pretended I didn't and then just kind of forthrightly took a side or declared something to be true and unambiguous that I didn't for certain know to be true and ambiguous, like, then what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. So, I mean, the times I feel like where, you know, again, particularly with season one, where people just got so in the weeds with me over like small details about the case or just tiny details that were very important to the case. Sometimes I feel like the reaction that I was seeing was like, oh, you can tell by the way that, you know, they were just like interpreting things in a way, a different way from me. That,
right.
You know, different than I was over like, well, you can hear from the sound of his voice that he's lying or something. You know what I mean? Things like that, where you're just like, well, you know, all that stuff that's sort of like, I feel it in my gut or I know it in my bones or I can just tell by the way, you know, he sounds. I just threw all that stuff out. I mean, you don't know.
Right.
You have no idea. You have no idea.
Right.
You know, so sure, you think what you want. But that sort of stuff didn't affect me because I just thought, well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So,
unless
you show me the facts, I'm not buying it.
Yeah. And you must have encountered some people who were really obsessed. Like,
yeah,
like some
I still do.
Fans,
I still
yeah.
do. Yeah.
And do you, I mean, there's a certain point where you're like, you've got to let it go. Move on to other things.
I mean, I certainly have. I can't speak for other people. I mean, the other thing to remember, too, is like I did that story in 2014. We're now talking in 2017.
Right.
But for some people, they just heard it last week, you know, so that's their first. I don't know when they listened either. So it may be that it's just kind of fresh to them. But I'm kind of like, yeah, right. I'm kind of working on other stuff now.
You know? Right. Like,
so, OK. Bye. So I don't, you know, I don't engage with it too much. If people are, you know, I've got the theory, you know, and I'll read it and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So I listened to a couple of This American Life segments, one about your mom and one about your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the one about your dad, Julian Koenig, he was a well-known copywriter and came up with a bunch of famous ad slogans like
mm-hmm.
Timex takes a licking and keeps on ticking and the Think Small campaign for Volkswagen. And he claims that he also popularized shrimp in that episode. Anyway, what that show was about was how he felt that this other ad guy, George Lois, stole a bunch of his ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story featuring your mom, Maria Matheson, is about how she thinks there are a bunch of topics that are off limits because they're boring. Like mm-hmm. you shouldn't talk about your diet or your health or your period or what route you took to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so so it seems like the lesson that you're getting from, you know, from your parents is one about the importance of original ideas and giving people credit where credit's due and then sort of, you know, don't be boring. It seems like these ideas would have affected you, I guess, as a storyteller. And I'm wondering how their influence either serves you or challenges you in your work.
That's so interesting that you like I literally have never thought about that in that way at all. Like, that's really interesting. I feel like you just answered it. Like, oh, I guess, yeah, maybe. Yeah, interesting. All right. Yeah, I'll just let you posit that and we can say it's true. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to ever say, like, here's the one lesson I learned from my parents. You know what I mean? Like, I
right.
think that's a fake thing. Like, we all learn 1,000 lessons from our parents constantly. But, you know, my dad was was very smart, very hated like puffery of any kind, hated false, I don't know, like hypocrisy and just like this sort of false importance people put on things. And he just like hated sort of nonsense like that, especially politically. And just was so funny and really, really just gifted with words in a conversational way. But like, you know, he was just like very big on the integrity of ideas and the integrity of sort of public behavior and public action and the need to like stick to that. And so, you know, he's like the type of guy who would be like grumbling at the television all the time because it's so rare, you know, that happens in government.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, my mom, like, yeah, don't bore her. Boy, don't bore her. You can see it. Her face just changes immediately. Like you can tell. She just gets this kind of stony, still look. And you're like, ah, you lost her. So I don't know. You know, I mean, the other thing is my stepfather was a writer as well. And he was my stepfather from the time I was 5 years old. And his work really, you know, I saw him being a writer his whole life. I mean, the guy who would like go out to his writing studio early in the morning and not reemerge till dinner time, and just the grind of it and the hard work of it and the rigor of it. So I think I learned, you know, I watched all those things. How much of that I have achieved or, you know, internalized, I don't know, but it certainly I observed it my whole life. So, and those are all hard things, I mean, that I still struggle with. I mean, I'm a big time waster. I'm a procrastinator. I'm intellectually lazier than my father was. I'm, you know, I bore myself. I'm boring myself right now as I speak. Like, you know, we all struggle with these things. I struggle with them, but I do think they're good goals, I guess I would say. I do think that they're worthy things to strive for.
This is my last question.
Okay.
Serial made audio storytelling popular again because I feel like it's actually an old art form that you all brought into the mainstream, and it was hugely popular. One article I read said there have been over 267 million episode downloads combined for both seasons. And you said the first season of Serial was about the basics, love and death and justice and truth, all topics that people can sort of latch on to, I think. I'm wondering how much of what you create now, or even, you know, while you were working on This American Life, is based on a formula for good storytelling, and how much of it is sort of based more on instinct or improv, or I guess I'm wondering how predictable is an audience to you?
Oh, that's interesting. How predictable is an audience? I mean, I think to say there is a formula, it's not totally untrue. I mean, what I would say more is I don't think there's a formula, and partly because this sounds like a cliche or something, but it really is true. It is true that every single story you do or that I have done, whether it be like a, you know, 12-part thing for Serial or a 12-minute story for This American Life, like, it's just going to have different challenges in it. It's going to have weirdnesses that you have to figure out how to deal with, or sources or characters who are problematic or you can't get to, and so you have to work around. And it's like every story has its own set of like delights and complications that are going to dictate how you tell it, how you report it, and how you tell it. It's just a fact. Like it happens every time. So it's not like you can say, you know, oh, I know how to do this story. I've done this story 10 times. Like every story I do feels like a brand new, like I've just woken up that day to a brand new world, you know, where you're like, okay, how am I going to deal with this thing? So in that sense, they're all different. In a more kind of elemental sense, I think there are certain things that keep human beings listening, and probably have been the same elements for, you know, since the Stone Age, which are, you know, surprise and kind of like delight. And so, I mean, we look for those when we're trying to decide on a story to do, or somebody's pitching us something, or we're pitching something to our colleagues. Those are always the questions of like, what about this story is making you want to tell it? Like, whatever is making you want to tell that story, those are the same things that are going to make someone want to listen, if you see what I mean. I mean, it sounds a little tautological, but it's kind of like, if I like the people in it and I find them in some way interesting or fun to like just spend a little time with, that's going to be something that makes the story work. What, you know, plot is hugely, hugely important. So just the like what the narrative steps of like A, B, C, D, E, like what is the arc of the thing? Where is it going to go? What is it about the story that's confusing to me that I want to figure out? Like what that sort of driving question of the thing that isn't fake, that's real, that is truly beguiling to me or confusing to me. That's an element we look for. Because if I already know it, it's not like, why do you want to hear me go through it if I already know it? So it's sort of like, and that's for all of us. It's just like, well, what are the questions you would want to ask that person about this thing, you know, and presumably those are the same things that you, the audience, would want to ask. So we're sort of just like in loco listener a lot of the time. And then the final thing is like surprise. You know, sometimes there's like a good story, but it goes kind of exactly to the place you think it will from the moment you hear what the topic is, and you've sort of heard that version of this, like some version of this same story 100 times, and like, sure, it's good, and like, you know, it's worthy, but it's not, you're not surprised at the end in any way. It's not thought-provoking in any way. Usually we don't do those stories. We just end up killing them because it's like, you know, yeah, it's fine, but other people have already done this and they've done it well. So like, what are we bringing to it? So if something goes to a place that's unexpected, that's really, we sort of love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love to be surprised myself, you know?
Yeah.
So
me too. And it seems like you guys have that's your specialty. And it must take like being really, I don't know, I feel like you're meticulous about it too.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a bit of energy, honestly, because but in a good way, I think, because you have to sort of keep keep out eagle eyes and an open mind as much as you can to allow yourself to be surprised by things.
Well, thank you, Sarah Koenig, for taking some time out. Can you even give us a little hint of when the third season is going to come out?
Boy, I hope in the spring, sometime. Okay. Late spring. I don't know. We don't have a date yet. But that I hope will become clear before too long. It stresses me out to think about it. But
yeah,
yes, spring,
sorry.
Late spring. I don't know.
I don't want to put any
pressure
on you.
We're working.